Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for September 8th, 2009. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In this episode, I'm speaking with Sachdev Sidhu from the University of Toronto about a research article from his group published in the current issue of Science Signaling. This article explores the evolution of PDZ domains, which are protein modules that mediate protein-protein interactions. Dr. Sidhu spoke with me on the phone from his office in Toronto. The paper that you've published in Science Signaling is about PDZ domains, and I know that PDZ domains are important for organizing subcellular structures and for bringing together signaling proteins. Could you explain why PDZ domains are so important for the biology of a cell?
Sure. So PDZ domains are particularly interesting because even within signaling complexes, there are some families of proteins that are associated with higher level multicellular organisms, particularly cell-cell contacts, signaling at the cell membrane. And PDZ domains are one of these families. And what we find most interesting about them is, even in eukaryotes such as yeast, they're essentially absent. But when you get to multicellular organisms like worm, suddenly there's hundreds of these. So it seems that they're correlated with the rise of multicellular complexity. And so we thought this would be a perfect system to look at how higher order signaling that's involved in cancer, cell development and stuff, kind of comes about.
You talk about PDZ domains being one type of PRM, a peptide recognition module. In the paper, you say that with organism complexity, or maybe with genome complexity, that PRM families grow.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, do you mean that individual families gain more members, or that there are more types of PRMs?
Interestingly, it's more that the family gains more members. So once you get to early multicellular organisms like worms, it turns out most of the families are already established, and perhaps almost all of them. And what's interesting then is that when we get to humans, mice, etc., they really differ in the number of family members there are and the details of how those members interact with each other and with other proteins. So there's no real large gain in radical new families. Rather, it's a expansion of existing families.
So the different types of PRMs have been around for a long time.
Yes.
But in multicellular organisms, each type has been expanded and elaborated on.
Yes, and interestingly, there is a clear delineation in that multicellular organisms do have a few types of domains that don't exist in unicellular, and PDZs are a good example of that. So there are multicellular specific PRMs, and that's the ones we're particularly interested in. But once all multicellular organisms do seem to have those PRMs, so worms and human are separated by at least a billion years in evolution, yet worms have already acquired all of the families almost that humans have. And the changes have come simply in fine-tuning and expanding those family members.
What is a PDZ domain? I mean, how are these domains defined?
So structurally, that's the other reason. They're actually good to work with. They're involved in very complex biology, yet the domain is very simple and clearly definable by its 3D structural fold. So it's about 100 amino acids, which is pretty small, and all PDZ domains have a similar overall shape. That means they're easy to find by just sequence homology searches. They're easy to clone and express because at the protein level, the gross level, they're all similar. Yet at the details of what they actually do, they're significantly different. So we find them easy to work with as a large family because we can do genomics level searches and clone them out, work with them on a large level. And yet we can also look at the fine differences in their overall specificities.
Your group's interested in these PDZ domains and how they've been modified over evolutionary time to function in a multicellular context, to form subcellular structures and to bring together signaling complexes. What sorts of experiments did you do? You know, specifically, what aspects of PDZ domain function and evolution did you study?
I'd say the fundamental question we and others are interested in is, once you have, say, a single member of a family arise as a particular protein fold, how easy is it for that single member to duplicate and kind of evolve into a family? Because that really is a fundamental question that would help us define how quickly new complexes can arise, because it's been well established that new protein complexes and thus new signaling functions arise through protein-protein interactions evolving in the cell. So the big question is, how easy is it for a family to populate a genome once you have the first progenitor?
That's the basic idea of duplication and divergence in terms of evolutionary biology, how genes evolve to acquire new functions.
Exactly. These ideas of gene duplication, etc., and divergence have been out there literally since genes were discovered. But what we're really now starting to do is being able to set up experimental systems using proteins that we engineer to look at that process explicitly. And basically, that's what we wanted to do. What we wanted to do was to make a user-defined set of PDZ domains, where we start with a single progenitor, use molecular biology and synthetic DNA to engineer a family of proteins based on that, and then we can ask the questions in real time and in exhaustive detail, basically in a test tube or a ELISA plate. How many mutations does it take to go from one specificity to another? How robust is the evolutionary process? In other words, is 5 mutations sufficient to get a whole new function, or does it take many more mutations? Because these kinds of questions really help us understand how much evolutionary time is required to go from one signaling complex to another simply by evolution at the protein level.
When you were making these mutant versions of PDZ domains, were you making random mutations, or did you hold some positions in the sequence constant, like the highly conserved positions? Did you hold those constant and then introduce random mutations in other places?
Yeah, what we did was kind of a intermediate level of mutagenesis, in that we did not mutate as heavily as natural proteins are mutated, yet we mutated enough that the binding site where the actual interaction takes place is highly mutated. One thing that makes natural families very difficult to understand is, even though they have a similar fold, on average they may have only 30% identity between family members. So that means out of 100 amino acids, 70 would be mutated. And we know all of those mutations are not required for change of function. Most are probably silent or incidental. But it makes it very hard for us to then understand which mutations actually evolutionarily were important and which were not. So what we decided to do was to go kind of in the middle. We knew from structures where the binding site is, and we picked 10 positions that are likely to contact the other binding partner and influence specificity, and then we concentrated mutations in that region. So what we ended up with is a family that's highly divergent in function, just like the natural family, yet not that divergent in sequence. At most, any two family members in our group are only 10 amino acids apart, and many are less than that. I'd say an average of 5 or 6. So we had a very defined set of mutations, and kind of the nice thing is then you get a much more understandable system because it's minimal mutations in the binding site, and then you can actually have some hope of understanding the molecular details of the evolution.
Let me ask you just a technical question. Did you start out with a human PDZ domain?
Yes.
And you mutated them in vitro, and then you tested binding affinities in vitro, or did you do some of these in yeast assays?
That's one limitation. We have not done anything in yeast yet. So what we've done is completely in vitro specificity profiling to determine the in vitro level of affinity and specificity. So that's a good point. In fact, we're now looking at collaborating with people to put some of these back into cells to see what this means for recruitment of cellular interactions.
So then what did this synthetic family of mutated PDZ domains that you had created teach you about PDZ domains in nature and how they evolve?
There's several key points. One is we learned that the very fold of this protein is kind of, you could say it's primed to bind, in that the very shape of the backbone, which means not even looking at the details of the side chains, the basic shape of the protein predisposes it to interact with other proteins. That was very interesting because what we found was we could just randomly mutate, and a very good number of those proteins that we obtained by mutagenesis were already functional without having to select for function.
These proteins, despite having mutations in them, naturally kind of fold into this shape that mm-hmm. favors binding to other proteins. So is the idea then that this basic shape gives the proteins the propensity to interact with other proteins, and then specific mutations either strengthen or weaken that interaction?
Yes,
favor those mutations or to disfavor?
Yeah, absolutely. You said it perfectly. And that's kind of the whole thing, is that because the shape already predisposes binding, mutations then do not have to actually induce binding, but rather modulate the binding event. So that's obviously much easier to do, in that the mutations fine-tune an interaction that's essentially inherent to the basic shape of the protein. And that kind of leads to finding number two, which is that we found that family diversity that is comparable to the natural diversity that has arisen over billions of years can literally be created overnight. In a one-month experiment, we were able to create the same level of family complexity that exists in nature. And that was a very surprising to us, and I think it'll be surprising to many people in the field, because our view of protein-protein interactions is they're very intricate, very hard to engineer. It's a long, arduous process to get a precise interaction. And in fact, my group works on many systems where that is the case, where you're trying to engineer novel specificities. But it looks like in this fold, and probably others that have been used widely in evolution, that this process is very rapid. So for example, we'd previously defined that there's at least 16 natural specificities in the natural PDZ family, so 16 different classes. And remarkably, amongst our synthetic domains that we made in less than a month, we found 14 distinct specificities. So really, that without even trying and without coevolution, we got a synthetic version of the PDZ family that is already as complex and probably as functional as the natural family. So the third conclusion is that it's clear that the natural specificities that exist in nature, basically they do not saturate the potential of this domain for interactions. And what I mean by that is when we mutated this single PDZ domain, we found that we could get offspring that had many different specificities. Some of those specificities were very similar to other natural domains, which was interesting because now we can clearly see how a single domain through a limited number of mutations gives rise to other specificities that exist in nature. As interesting was the fact there was another set of new specificities which are not observed in nature up to this point. So these are genuinely novel, new specificities arising. And this is actually quite interesting for us because it means that we can now think about designing PDZ domains that are very different from any natural ones. And this kind of gets to this idea of synthetic biology, because there is an interest in developing building blocks that we can introduce into cells to engineer novel pathways, like for stem cell engineering, turning particular networks on and off. And kind of the good news for us is that we already now have a set of synthetic domains that look like PDZ domains, function as protein interaction modules, yet do so and recognize proteins that are completely different from natural ones.
You could design artificial PDZ domains to do whatever you want in a cell, to bind whatever substrate you want, maybe to use to treat disease or to, as you said, to engineer stem cells or to even create artificial signaling networks.
Yes, and importantly, we know we can now design them in a manner that's orthogonal to natural domains, because that's important. We can put in new domains that don't interfere with existing domains, so their specificities are different, and that's becoming quite important, because if you do put in new interactions, you want to make them different enough from existing ones that they don't interfere with stuff that's already going on in the cell.
Dr. Sidhu, thank you for talking with me.
Thanks, it was fun.
The research article we discussed is by Ernst and colleagues and is included in the September 8th issue of Science Signaling. The paper is titled Rapid Evolution of Functional Complexity in a Domain Family. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. On behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.